it your attention, I'd like to declare the meeting open at 1:03 and start by acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet. I'd also like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australians that may be present here this afternoon. Just in case we have to evacuate, housekeeping councillors and those in the gallery, in the event of an evacuation, I ask you please remain calm. Follow my directions, and the emergency exit is through the gallery doors on your left down the stairwell into Bloomfield Street. Just a reminder of Section 32 of our standing orders in regards to public conduct at a meeting. All members of the public present at a meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recordings or take any photographs, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards, or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with others present. Be suitably dressed. I'd ask that you turn all your mobile devices to silent, and please, if you need to, take a call, leave the chambers to do so. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, ask that person to leave the meeting and not return for a period as decided by the chairperson, and that could include future meetings. There are no leaves of absence. I note that Councillor Elliott is in the building, but he's reducing the germs that he spreads in the time that he's in here because he's not well, so we will call him in at a point where he needs to be recorded for the vote. Just quickly, declaration of interest on any items of business, councillors. You know the responsibilities under the Local Government Act, and you can make that declaration at any time. This is ordinary business of council, however, so you should have no need to have cause for a conflict. The first item on the agenda is my budget speech, and I present to you Council's final budget of this electoral cycle. And I guess I'd just like to reflect back on the path that we set during our first. When this Council came together for the first time in 2016, we took a unified approach to help lay the foundations to take this city forward. We agreed on the need for financial responsibility, preserving what we all love about this city, preparing for the future, and despite the temptations, staying within our means to shield our city from volatility both now and into the future. Proud to say we have achieved that. The budget that we present today is a product of the budgets that have preceded us. It is responsible and balanced, it's within our means, and it caters for the necessities both now as well as providing for the needs of the future. I have no doubt there are things that councils would have liked to see in this budget that were unable to be accommodated today at this time, and councils will have the opportunity to articulate that later in this meeting. Those projects that fell below the line for this budget are not off the table. We will continue to look for efficiencies and lobby other levels of government to work with council to deliver them. For those of you who haven't been through this process, in the gallery, the process of setting a budget is arduous. And for that, I thank councillors for their diligence, their advocacy, and the forthright prosecution of their cases on behalf of their various residents. The result is a balanced budget, and at $305 million, the largest we have presented thus far. It is projected to deliver a small operational surplus while keeping the average rates and charges increased to 2.66%, or about 62 cents per week for the typical Category 1A owner-occupied household, excluding utilities and state government charges. The increase in the general rate and charges for an average commercial property in Redlands Coast is similar, helping to support the economic development strategies we now have in place. As an ageing community, the total pensioner rebates across the city rise to more than $3 million for 2019-20. And I'm pleased that we're able to maintain rebates of $335 a year for a full pensioner and $167.50 for a part pensioner. This is the budget that is appropriate for Redlands Coast in 2019-20, and I'm proud of what it delivers, including insulating ratepayers as much as possible from those outside cost pressures. One significant outside cost pressure came in the form of state government land revaluations, which saw an average increase of more than 10% in land valuations across the city. Legislation dictates we must use these valuations to frame our rates, and our revaluations were certainly at the front of our minds during our long budget process. We work very hard to spread evenly the load across the rate space and present a budget that serves the entire city. Again this year, state government bulk water increases are another significant challenge we have had to endure. This year, we see a 6.8% increase in bulk water costs, or a total of almost 50% over the last 5 years. Just to put that into perspective, this year's bulk water bill for council is almost $40 million. This is equivalent to about 70% of our entire capital works budget and is a significant impost on our ratepayers. Unlike other councils, our bottom line and our rates bill includes water, where they don't get a separate bill like other LGAs in South East Queensland. And yet, despite these ongoing bulk water increases, council has managed to keep the increase on our council-controlled water costs to less than 2%. What is even more pleasing is that this year's modest increase in the council-controlled retail component of our water cost follows us holding prices steady since 2015 to help absorb the state's continued bulk water increases. The state's imposition of a waste levy on council also has had an impact. While the state will pay us to partially offset that cost, there will be a shortfall. And despite gaining some ground in our efforts to convince the state and federal governments to better fund infrastructure for our community, we are budgeting less than 5.7% of this budget to come from our state and federal counterparts and grants, leaving our residents to do the heavy lifting. We will continue to advocate for more state and federal funding for our community, but as we recently did when we joined councils across the nation, to lobby for an increase in federal assistance grants to 1% of all national revenue. We appreciate this funding from the federal government. It does go a long way to assisting councils across Australia. And for us, it goes to those ground services that are important. But with councils managing 33% of all public assets while collecting just 3% of all the nation's taxes, it is really inadequate, and particularly for the needs of our island communities, which are remote by any definition of the word. The external cost pressures we face each year are not going away, and so Council is investigating a series of innovative solutions aimed at finding savings for our residents into the future. Everything from alternative power options, innovative transport solutions, and a collaborative regional approach to reducing waste costs. This shows our commitment to continuous improvement and insulating our community against these rising costs. To offset the aggregate effects of all these internal imposts, Council has been dogged in its determination to find savings to keep rates to a minimum. So the result is a budget which a city can now afford, and into the future, as well as now, it will support the lifestyle that we have grown to love here in Redlands. Redlands residents tell us they do not want the livability of our Redlands coast compromised, and we can only achieve that if we manage our finances responsibly. The merits of Council's continued financial responsibility is highlighted by our ability to act quickly to bring strategic land at Birkdale and Cleveland Point into our community ownership. Our strong financial stewardship means we can secure the 61 hectares of the Birkdale Commonwealth land and the site adjacent the Council Reserve at Cleveland Point to the community. These areas will complement our existing community estate, which now boasts 9,800 hectares of conservation land, about 18% of our total land area. Indeed, Council owns and manages more environmental and conservation land per capita than many of our neighbouring councils. And while this adds to our reputation of a city of choice for residents and visitors, it also comes at a cost, especially through the need to protect those areas and adjoining communities from threats such as catastrophic fires, which we all take very seriously. This budget will invest $8.7 million into protecting and expanding this community-owned land so that it can be enjoyed by generations of Redlanders. This year's budget delivers a $58.4 million capital works program targeted at growing and sustaining community infrastructure vital to the Redlands Coast future, especially our roads and our parks. The 2019-20 capital works program is focused, it's achievable, and it's the result of a commitment to provide ratepayers with the best value. This $58.4 million program provides more than $21 million for roads projects, helping get Redlands around the city faster and safer. Almost $9.5 million will go towards the naturally wonderful playgrounds, parks and sports fields that our community loves and appreciates, including $2 million for Stage 2A of the Thornlands Community Park. With more coastline than both the Gold and Sunshine Coast, and six beautiful island communities, the cost of being a coastal city is not insignificant. And this year we will invest $6.4 million into maintaining marine assets, including canal and breakwater works. Another $6.8 million will go towards infrastructure projects, including footpaths, cycle paths, bus shelters and seat renewals. $4.8 million has been earmarked for water, waste and wastewater projects. And $1.5 million will be targeted at community and cultural development. Some of our major individual projects include $4.5 million for the Collins Street and School of Arts Road upgrade at Redland Bay, $2.5 million for canal trench blocks at Aquatic Paradise, $2.3 million for further work on the Wynnum Creek Parking and Revitalisation Project at Redland Bay, $1.9 million for the William Street Breakwater at Cleveland, and another $2.2 million for the continued expansion of the popular Redlands and Digiscape Centre at Capalaba, adding to its reputation as a regionally significant environmental education centre. All of these projects support the livability and the future of our city. They are all projects that the future generations will enjoy, and I'm hoping they are projects I and my fellow councillors get to see delivered in the next term of council. For this budget, as in previous years, we have let our community be our guide. It is informed by what our community tells us they want for our city. And as in previous budgets, there is no doubt every councillor in these chambers would want to do a little bit more, or a lot more. But we cannot write cheques our community can't afford. I look forward to more debate and compromise around this table for future budgets, and genuinely thank my colleagues for their commitment and the compromises that they have all made. As I mentioned before, the budget process is arduous, and not just for our councillors, might I add. On behalf of all the councillors here, I would like to thank our CEO, Andrew Chesterman, and his executive leadership team for their guidance and the support throughout this process. I'd also particularly like to thank Council's 16 group managers who make up our senior leadership team. Our Chief Financial Officer, Deborah Corbett-Hall, and her finance team should be especially commended for their many long days, their expertise and good sense of humour, and particularly their attention to detail. The professionalism and good humour that has been demonstrated through this budget process is much appreciated, so thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, councillors, members of the public in the gallery, on behalf of council, I present this year's budget. Thank you. So, councillors, as has been tradition for this term of council, I will be suspending the standing orders so that you can all speak to the budget. I thought what I might do is, once again, the 80-20 rule, as I've said, there's things in here that we would all have loved to have seen, and there are other things that you want to celebrate, and I'll give you that opportunity to do that right now. But I would also, I'm going to ask the CEO also to explain the budget process from a technical point of view, so that there's an understanding for people in the gallery that, you know, this process follows a very collaborative approach driven by officers who have worked very hard to put this in front of us. Once that happens, I thought I might change the order a bit. I tend to go one round the room. I might just do 1-1-1-1. Are you happy with that? So, Council, just to give you a break up of... so, anyway, that's all good. Okay, so councillors, if I could just get a motion, please, to suspend the standing order so that we can have some time to speak to the budget. Move, Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? That motion is carried unanimously. So, yeah, if you just want to maybe give a quick rundown on behalf of all of us to explain the process that we've been through and how officers participate and contribute to what has been a very sustainable budget this year.
Well, thanks, Madam Mayor, and good afternoon, everybody, and good afternoon those in the gallery. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to the budget development process, and there's no doubt that developing a budget in local government is a complex task, and I think for the community's interests it's helpful to just talk a bit about the way the budget's put together. As the Mayor said, the budget is the culmination of many hours of work, and it's probably thousands of hours of officers' work, which in reality commences soon after the adoption of the previous budget. Weekends, many late nights form part of this process, and every part of the organisation has been involved in some way. And equally for councillors, it's demanding. The volume of material that councillors need to read, understand and get their head across is immense, and their contributions to assist in the steering, the direction of the budget and the policies which you see here today underpin the strategy overall. All councillors have worked together for many months with this input to form the basis of the strategic decisions that guide the development of the budget and agree the significant programs of works and initiatives that sit within the numbers. Councillors, for your guidance, on behalf of the organisation and my executive leadership team, I thank you all. Of course, it's not possible to adopt a budget at such a granular level that, for example, every footpath, library program, playground repair or vehicle replacement is evident. Importantly, a budget is just that. It's an estimation of the revenue and expenses over a specified future period of time, and it's usually compiled and re-evaluated on a periodic basis. So today's budget is not the end, but really the beginning of the journey for the next 12 months. The $305 million budget relies appropriately on the expertise of our dedicated employees who are well trained in their field and positioned to provide advice and recommendations to Council for what culminates in the budget we see here today. The Capital Works program is perhaps the best example where officers have a deep understanding of the performance and service standards being performed by our assets. The relevant asset and service management planning process, along with the prioritisation framework, which was agreed by councillors, is then used to develop the capital spend within what the city can afford. Of course, there's always a balance, as the Mayor has said, to what can be delivered in any one year, and my focus since arriving here just over 2 years ago is certainly to get ourselves in a position to deliver the program. So this concept of delivering the program has been a focus of ELT and commenced two budgets ago when, for example, money for design work was put into the 18-19 budget to get many of the projects in this budget shovel-ready so that we can hit the ground running on July 1. This is an important shift in the way that we budget for future years, and we've discussed more with councillors this year about moving towards a rolling capital program to smooth the delivery of projects and avoid the lumpiness of the current budgeting process. The community may be interested to know that at times projects necessarily need to be delivered over a number of years, and this is sometimes because of a deliverability challenge, but it's also so that council can allocate the community's money across the many competing priorities that exist across the city. So by way of example, it's always cheaper to do one renovation on your house, but we can seldom afford it all in one go. So we do the kitchen 1 year, we add a bedroom as the family grows, and then we come back to paint the house another year when we realise that taking care of our asset is important. Spending early to save is a good long-term strategy, but can only be implemented on a stable budget that has the capacity for the upfront spend to then reap the rewards of the saving later in time, possibly years later. We also, of course, look to Council to guide the speed of works to balance the community's interests. Council has established a process where budgets are developed by both a bottom-up and top-down approach. General and group managers own and are accountable for their budgets, following final decisions on revenue and expenditure by our Council here today. This is a challenge we've risen to as an organisation, responding with a yes-if approach and reprioritising budgets to align budgets within business outcomes. Finally, some context to another key component of our organisational strategy which we see in the budget here today. The 17-18 budget held an operating deficit of $11.1 million. The contributing factor to that was $58 million in depreciation, increased by $8 million from the previous year as a result of asset revaluation impacts, as well as newly created assets. In that year, nearly $6 million in electricity costs continued to consume a lot of operational budget. Council held its water prices for the second year in a row, knowing that the reduced revenue would impact on our operating position. Whilst an operating deficit is acceptable as a one-off or maybe 2 years in a row, the local government department, Queensland Audit Office and also the Queensland Treasury Corporation expect to see forecasts and future budgets stabilising to balanced or surplus operating budgets. During my first few ELT meetings in 2017, it was agreed that for the 17-18 year, one of our focus areas would be to stabilise the budget and work with Council to do that. Through scrutinising budget requests, working to targets and ensuring officers understood the expectations of stabilising a budget, we're well on the way. We also saw the impacts on a budget of asset creation and management through depreciation, programming and timing of work, contingencies and whole-of-life costs. Moving to 2018, saw our strategy move from stabilise the budget to improve Council's financial position, which resulted in more work against budget targets, maintaining a healthy tension and seeking efficiencies. To further support budget development and community outcomes, the organisation committed to improving the way Council works, whilst we also focused on our people and delivering the program. The 2018-19 budget that was proposed to Council was an improvement on the prior year from an operating position. The $2.4 million operating deficit, down from the $11 million, was the natural progression on a path towards this balanced budget. The budget has some allocation built into it for strategic priorities and innovation, as well as the challenging task to try and budget for provisions such as annual long service leave, as well as closed landfill. Depreciation rose again to $64 million, equating to a $14 million increases over two budget years. So the step process to move from an $11 million operating deficit to an operating balance budget, which is presented here today across two financial years, has ensured changes to the way we work and budget is now becoming habitual in the organisation. It's the community's money, and I expect it to be spent in the same way we'd spend our own. 2018 also saw the launch of Council's strategic procurement project, which will further improve the way we work and also improve our financial position, moving from the default procurement model to a more contemporary category management and strategic procurement approach. Along with the development of our Program Management Office, the progression of the Asset Management Project and Asset Manager roles and accountabilities is providing us with a solid framework for the years ahead. I've been involved in public sector administration and budgeting for many years, and I've been genuinely impressed with the way our group and service managers have worked together and managed up what they believe is necessary and affordable. It's always a process of prioritising and reprioritising, and not just take last year's budget and add CPI. The current budget position has placed the organisation in a position where we can build a solid foundation for elements within our control. So in closing, I'd just like to thank the Mayor and all councillors for their guidance to develop this budget, and I'd also like to thank the Executive Management Team, and in particular, General Manager of Organisational Services, John Oberhart, and of course our Chief Financial Officer, Deborah Corbett-Hall, for their leadership in the development of the budget. And I hope that little story has been helpful to understand the process a little more. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, CEO. All right, councillors, so if I could start with Councillor Borghlari, and if we can try to limit it to 5 minutes, that would be great. Thank you, Councillor Borghlari.
I always have to read quickly. That's not fair.
just don't feel any... like it's up to councillors if they want to speak. Have said they may not want to.
No, that's just true.
So you might better steal some of their
firstly
minutes.
Firstly, I'd like to thank Andrew for that summary. I think that was something that should continue, because we need to bring the community on the journeys with us so that everyone understands where we're at. So we're actually going to repeat a bit, because I wanted to also stress the amount of work that's gone into this budget. There are many components of a budget, which Andrew has just mentioned, but none can be considered without the other, and no councillor is going to be happy with this entire budget. This budget book is like a storybook. It has 12 chapters or agenda items, and each gives information that leads to the final budget outcomes. Council has a responsibility to deliver a budget that is financially sustainable and delivers the necessary services to the whole of the city. And I believe this budget achieves this outcome. And I am satisfied with all aspects that we have covered to deliver it. I would like to quote a definition of integrity by Bryony Brown. Integrity is choosing courage over comfort, choosing what is right over what is fun, fast and easy, and practicing your morals, not just preaching them. Keeping this in mind, though I am disappointed and frustrated on some points, I believe this budget has been compiled with impacts on residents considered, long-term financial sustainability for council in mind, and will keep the services and business as usual being delivered. I believe this budget has integrity. For this, I thank the officers who have diligently developed processes with transparency and good governance to ensure priority has been given to projects for the benefit of the whole of our city. This, of course, means every councillor has some project that we lobbied for which hasn't been included. For me and my division, this includes lighting projects, footpath, drainage and foreshore works. However, though disappointed, I can see on paper a formula that was used to prioritise projects fairly across the city, so I can accept the situation as a budget is for the outcomes of the whole city. This budget did not only focus on priorities, but also efficiencies. Departments have driven change to ensure efficiencies were found and cutbacks were made, again based on priorities for what the whole of city requires. I thank officers. As similar to councillors, officers have their passions about their work, and they would like to see more tree planting, more footpaths, or whatever their particular area delivers in our budget. However, across council, each and every department has made sacrifices, and I know this because I've heard, in their budgets, plus found efficiencies to ensure council and councillors were all working towards reducing costs to our community and deliver a sustainable financial future. Previously, the financial long-term pathway did cause me some concern, as I did not have the enough confidence in council was on a sustainable financial pathway. The operational deficit that was previously mentioned had risen to $15 million, and spending more than what is being earned in any budget, whether it's your household or council, is not responsible or good financial planning. Yes, it can happen for a couple of years, but to continue would be irresponsible. Over the past 2 years, every council department under the leadership of the CEO and executive leadership group have changed this financial pathway and, importantly, our culture. And council has this year presented a budget that remains delivering the essential services, plus, importantly, turning around an operational deficit to be a balanced budget. This is very rewarding to be able to present a true balanced budget as the last budget for this term of council. Nothing is more important than financial sustainability, so I am very thankful for these new budget processes that reassure me. However, I do believe council needs to continue the work and sit down and work out strategies and visions to ensure going forward financial sustainability is utmost in our minds and there is at least a reliable five-year forecast. The figures in the budget forecast at present with loans amounts that haven't been planned and I think a very stretched target for no increase in employee numbers for 10 years all need to be vindicated. The most important vital services to be delivered by council has to be water and waste. As without these services meeting health regulations, any city would be shut down. I've had concerns regarding these areas as with ever-increasing population, spare capacity in council's ageing pipes, supplying new infrastructure, the pressure of increasing waste and the reduction and disposal of waste is also an increasing challenge for us, not only for our engineers, but also financially. I welcome the review that is currently happening as this will give answers to our concerns of required new works and ongoing maintenance to ensure the continuation of our quality service to our ever-expanding population and for the sustainability of the business. This might forecast some more tough future financial decisions, but as the quote said, integrity is choosing right over what is fun, fast and easy. And I look forward to these future discussions and the transparent outcomes. While councillors ensured that essential services were to be business as usual, the impact from the cost of delivering services and projects was always utmost in our minds when making our decisions. A challenging impact, as the Mayor mentioned this year, was having the first state government land valuation in 3 years. And as rates by legislation is based on these valuations, we really looked into what the impact would be, because we were worried about sharp increases, as significantly across the city, on average, it was a 10% rise in land valuations. Councillors were very cognizant of this impact this would have and directed our financial team to mitigate this impact. To reduce the impact, changes were made to rating categories and the formula, which is the rate in the dollar that is used, to achieve a more palatable rate increase. One example I would like to share, as I always compare yearly various properties in my division. One property that received a land valuation increase of $60,000, which was a variance of 10.53%. If we hadn't done the rate in the dollar change, they would have received a rate increase of 6.85%, and that is simply because of the land valuation. but due to the work our financial team has done and our decisions made, the increase will only be 2.9. That is a difference of nearly 4% that we were able to mitigate. I have stated this example as I wanted residents to be reassured both councillors and council officers worked hard to offset the land valuation impact and also the bulk water price impact which the Mayor has mentioned. Of course, some residents who didn't receive an increase in land valuations might be very lucky and not even have a rate rise, as it is impossible to introduce any changes that has the same impact on all properties. With the work Council has done to alleviate the land valuation increase and CPI, Council has been able to keep the rate increase on an average residential home to 2.84, excluding the state government charges for bulk water and emergency levy. We also considered our commercial properties, and they have been treated the same.
No, I think that figure, that percentage is wrong, isn't it? Isn't it 2.66?
Yeah. Including, sorry, I've read it wrong. We have also considered our commercial properties, and they have been treated the same as the residential by offsetting their valuations. There has been consistent treatment for all rating categories. Rates and charges fund approximately 31% of the year's full budget, which is $305 million. This includes the CapEx program, which delivers what our residents see, so there's always great interest in the program work. As I stated previously, councillors have all been a bit disappointed at the various divisional program projects that might not have been able to make it above the line. But this year, in the Capital Works program of $58 million, it is realistic and hopefully a more deliverable program. We have forecasts this year of a $20 million carry forwards, and we cannot continue to do this year after year. It is tough for councillors to agree on a smaller program, as everyone wants to deliver to our Redlands community. However, it is totally financially irresponsible and unrealistic to year after year go out with larger capital work program than can be delivered and have continual carryover projects. Agreeing on a smaller deliverable CapEx, as I previously stated, councillors have all made sacrifices in their divisions. Councillors have had their disappointments and frustrations, but agreeing on a smaller capital works program brings me back to the integrity of the document. I will continue conversations, as all councillors will, on the various projects, and we look forward to discussing these in our various budget reviews throughout the year. As the Mayor said, it can evolve. Across the city, there are various capital works programs which only affect specific local residents, and I am pleased to announce that Division 1, Wellington Point, Ormiston, will have some funds in the budget for road reseals, bus stops, plantings to increase our wildlife corridors, park infrastructure, and like Three Paddocks Park that was delivered this year and has been such a huge success with our local families, I am very excited and anticipating the park infrastructure in Apex Park and Raby Bay Esplanade Park. A small project that I'm also excited about is simply having a seat and table delivered in Skinner Park next to the playground, because a number of grandparents use this park and they'll now be able to extend their visit with grandchildren, as they will all have a seat. And I know that this is being very much welcomed, not that they know it yet, but I know as soon as they find out, they're going to be very happy. It's these small projects that sometimes have the huge impact on our community and bring a lot of satisfaction to we councillors. I have been assured the funding is in the budget for the CCTV Wellington Point cameras after receiving the recent state funding. This has been a long, hard marathon to reach this point, but I can reassure residents the time is nearly here and it is very rewarding to be able to have come to this stage. Besides the Capital Works program, we also have the Operational Works, and this is the program of works that is also of great interest, as we have fire management across our city, which our officers are extremely diligent maintaining, and the budget has been increased in this area. We have coastal hazard work, which takes millions of dollars, being such a foreshore city. Dredging down in Councillor Edwards' area, one project alone is $800,000, which shows where our money goes with having our foreshores. And importantly for our community passions, their bush care groups, their programs, their tree plantings is all covered in this budget. Again, there were various works that councils would have liked to have seen, but we made the sacrifices. Today it's been quite exciting morning because for years I've been lobbying for a tourist information centre, as other councillors have, to come back to Raby Bay. And this morning the Mayor and I and Councillor Mitchell and Councillor Golay and Bishop, I think, we all visited our new tourist information centre. And I'd like to commend the officers. It is amazing. It is so warm and welcoming, and I know it is going to be efficient and absolutely achieve the job that we've all been waiting for. And another one I've been lobbying for is the library bus. And I also got to see that this morning. And I cannot go through a budget meeting after 4 years without mentioning it. So two totally different projects that have evolved and Council has been able to deliver this year. So it was very exciting. As your representative, I'd like to take the opportunity to say I will support this budget as it is responsible. However, going forward, with everything that we're not happy about, I am sure that we will have many more discussions. Willard's Farm is one that I am disappointed in that hasn't progressed, as it is now married in with the Birkdale land. I am concerned that the house might go into further disarray. And also the amendment packages for our strategic wildlife corridors and our heritage, no money has been allocated to these either, and Bligh Street conservation land. But I look forward to further discussions on all these projects. In conclusion, I look forward to further work being completed on long-term financial strategies, increasing communication regarding both CapEx and OpEx work programs, and I hope there will be a vision for the city to ensure Redlands is sustainable in all areas going forward, as I feel now that financially Council has turned a path with increasing governance and priorities being involved in all decisions. With all aspects considered, Council having a $2.6 billion in assets, $40 million in debt only, we are in a very strong financial position. We hold more cash than debt. Again, a huge thanks to all the officers at all levels of Council, specifically to Deb and her financial team, but to all officers in producing this budget. I am proud to be an elected member that has steered and is now delivering a final budget for a term of Council that ensures Council is a strong financial position for our future, and I will support the budget.
Thank you, Councillor Boglari. Just to clarify, there is some capital money in for the Willard's Farm restoration, 150. So just 100.
It wasn't the amount we were hoping for.
There is $150,000 in there for that. Just there's operational and there's capital money, but I think you're after some operational money. Yeah. Okay, Councillor Bishop, would you like to go next? I'm going to just change the pattern for something different.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and as yourself and the CEO and Councillor Boglari have suggested, I think first, if I may, through you to our executive leadership team, just send a resounding endorsement and thanks to them for the work that's been done. To councillors, this is a principle-based budget. As an advocate for principle-based decision-making, I think it's a robust and defensible position that we take, which is to make sure that the best interest of the majority of citizens is always uppermost in our mind over the long-term future. We have 150,000-plus residents. There is $2.6 billion worth of assets that we own as a community. Managing all of that is complex. Making decisions about how we design the iterations and how we break that up is tricky, and the state government's application of a bulk water charge, of a revaluation this year, and also of a waste levy does add further complexities. It's pleasing to see how many things we do through special levies and charges. I think the community look to us for leadership. And while I know that the focus on this budget is very much around the fiscal single bottom line, I would like to suggest that going forward, the broader understanding of the real value in our community is from the citizens themselves. The wisdom of the crowd, when we consult and when we have specific questions that we frame up for the city, we get back very compelling information for us that saves us millions of dollars. In the case of one issue, which is to do with aquatic paradise, in the past, having a dredge committee working in collaboration with them, it has saved us millions of dollars. While I'm on that subject, I'd like to just take a moment to suggest that the proposed introduction of a differential general rate to the people of Aquatic Paradise. I personally, as the local councillor, as bound by confidentiality, am saddened by the fact that we have not been able to collaborate and discuss with them. We've gone through an incredibly expensive process through the citizen advisory panel process to come up with an agreed position that the residents would not be charged in that area. And now that there's further discussion about how we're going to nuance going forward, the way that we will manage that, I believe it's absolutely imperative that we continue that discussion with the Aquatic Paradise Residents Association. I've actively remained in that space and I will continue to advocate to find a balance and to find that nuance, but I personally find it frustrating that we haven't been able to have that discussion and benefit from their wisdom. There will be incredible savings to be made, and I acknowledge the president of Aquatic Paradise Residents Association here, and I have an understanding, Mayor, that we will begin that conversation directly after this meeting, so I'm grateful for that, but it is of great frustration to me. In relation to the broader city, we are a city of islands. We know in this term that we have a 335 kilometre coastline range of issues that are incredibly complex and expensive for us to manage. We have an ageing population. North Stradbroke Island is a city, is an island that is in transition from sand mining to ecotourism now. We need to be sitting toe-to-toe, shoulder-to-shoulder at every opportunity with the state government, with the people of the Condamooka, through Kayak and through the various other stakeholders there, with the commercial partners and with our community, to make sure that that story of international significance is something that makes us all proud of the long abiding relationship that we have been able to have with government and with the Condamooka people. It's an incredibly important story, and the whale watching business, which is the first Australian business owned by the by an Indigenous group, I think that's a tremendous thing. We've got a teetering economy in the... I was led to believe by the CEO yesterday that this is actually the first. The CEO of Kayak did say that yesterday. I may have that incorrect, and if that's the case, I think it's Indigenous Australians. This is the first... Okay, so let me quantify that. But it is of international significance that we are rewriting constitutional law as a native title determination is being minted in our presence. It's an important story for us all to be aware of. We're in a broader climate of change where there's lots of changes going on. We're in a city where we have PDAs and ongoing issues with regards to the community's expectations about those things, and I think when we get that community feedback from people, it is always galvanising. And in the backdrop of Redlands Coast, I think it's important that we look, and I'll now like to come, if I may, to an issue that I have been lobbying very hard for many years, which is to do with the coastal erosion of Queen's Esplanade and Thornside. For years I've been asking for that to be developed. We are now moving close to getting some designs done, but the community's voice must be heard, that the shorebirds, that the Ramsar issues, that the access and amenity to the foreshore, that the light watercraft, we have a petition for that area, this all needs to be integrated into the design of the Thornside area for Beth Boyd Park, for some changes that are proposed for the park area. This is one of the things that I'm very proud of that the ELT have done, which is recognised in Section 8 under the outcomes for this plan, is focusing on the longer term planning. If I can just refer to it, is the Rolling Capital Program. This opportunity to take a 2 or 3 year plan gets opportunities for us to leverage the efficiencies and to integrate things, and I really would like to see that Thornside program integrated, because there are a number of issues that are compounding that must be addressed, and I think it's an opportunity for us to deliver an exemplar Redlands Coast, naturally wonderful, on the ground proof that we are committed to that and that we can do that as a city. There's two other things that I think are of critical importance. There are some great things happening in our area, roads, pathways that are so important to the residents, improvements to parks. If I there are some critical works that over many years need to be addressed and can only be addressed by council in relation to the William Taylor Sports Reserve. There does need to be some civic upgrades to drainage right throughout Thornside, actually, but in that particular area there's some work that can only be done by council, which is very important and needs to be done, and I'd like to advocate on behalf of that for residents, as I have done for a long period of time. And the issue to do, if I may, to refer to the Willard Farm opportunity, which I see as another incredible legacy opportunity, 61 hectares of land. We know that it is the most significant strategic purchase of land that has historical significance, that goes back to the Quandamooka people, is of significance to their nation, is also of significance to the pioneering heritage and establishment of the settlement pattern of the area. We need to map, manage, and where appropriate, protect those things. And I have an understanding from councillors that at the point that we do take ownership of that land, that we will be undertaking heritage studies, and I want to make sure that they are done by experts so that we can consider those things as we proceed to community consultation, which is referred to here, but it must be informed by those studies. When we do those studies, ask our community what they tell us, takes us into a place where we should feel confident that this budget can deliver. But if we risk the opportunity of not talking with the community, not asking the right question, then we run the risk of being smacked around the head. And I really want us to make sure that we go on that journey together. I'd just like to finish again, if I may, just by saying thank you to the councillors. I know that we've all had to suspend some disbelief. The 80-20 rule has been applied. I must admit I am frustrated to a significant degree with some of the issues that I've been lobbying for a long time. I look forward to this rolling program being able to deliver some exemplars for the area, and I want to make sure that residents, as they keep in contact with us, that we do what we can to ensure that the $58 million... Last thing I'd like to say, it's good to see a prudent... It's not over-promising. We know we're inheriting a $24 million carry forward, so it's important that we are going into this year being very clear. We will also have that other money on top, so the officers are still going to have a lot of work to do. Look forward to working shoulder to shoulder with them and community as we go forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Mitchell.
Well, thanks and welcome to the 2019-20 budget, everyone. It's certainly my intention to support the budget we present to the community today and do so again in the spirit of honouring all the great work we've done as a team, and thank each of my councillor colleagues and the ELT, SLT and down through the service managers and everyone in the organisation. It really is a team effort. I'd just like to highlight the documents themselves to the community. I think they've never been full of more useful information and more information in a user-friendly fashion. So I think that's something that we can be proud of, and that's an important part of being transparent and offering that authenticity and integrity and trust back out to the community. So the documents are there, and those of you that are having your budget parties tonight, and I'm sure there's many of you, there's an enormous amount of information in these documents. To go on capital expenditure, the various separate charges, debt and revenue policies, and anything else that excites you in the financial hygiene of this city. To the majority of ratepayers, however, that will never open this budget paper, be assured that to the best of our ability as a council, the city finances and the long-term budget plan is on solid strategic ground and continuing to head in the right direction. This year's budget builds on the last three, as several of us have said today, in setting that solid financial bedrock for the city. In short, we do remain committed to living within our means as a city family, and the community should expect no less. A great benefit of council doing these hard yards day to day was shown earlier this year in being able to grab the intergenerational opportunity at Cleveland Point land purchase. And again, thanks to the councillors, all the LT, and particularly to our CEO who led the charge in securing this opportunity. But we never would have had that chance unless we'd done the hard yards along the way. It's not just that land, of course, Birkdale, etc., but in my division, that was particularly pleasing for me. Capital expenditure does tend to get the spotlight, and so it should in many ways. $58.4 million, 19.2% of the year's budget, and again share that importantly the focus this year has been on what we can actually deliver. Say what we mean and then do it. And I think the great work that's been done throughout the organisation that will continue to improve. Significant portions of the capital work program is also spent on looking after what we own in a sustainable manner. This isn't flashy, but it's the essential work of council into the future. So I'm quite proud of that as well. There's plenty of highlights, $4.87 million on water and waste infrastructure, the $21 million on our local roads, $9.5 million on open space network. The numbers are in the book across the number of areas. To highlight some of this capital expenditure in Division 2 specifically, I'm very pleased to see some important infrastructure such as the $1.9 million William Street Marine Breakwater. This is going to open up the bay to all the residents of our city and visitors. It'll be safer to come in and out of that wonderful boat ramp area, and also offer some greater safety for the VMR, who are doing some great medical evacuations off Stradbroke Island and across the bay, and offer greater safety to those patients as well as the volunteers of that VMR. So it's one small part of that very impressive structure that's going on down there, and expensive. Some wonderful park upgrades on Stradbroke Island will be coming in this coming year. Old Schoolhouse Park at Amity Point, smaller works at Adder Rock, and some significant works at Point Lookout Oval, totalling over $1.2 million across the island. So this is great for our local families on Stradie, but also will be supportive of the tourism industry. We're happy to share. Redlands Performing Arts Complex Foyer, $100,000. That's great. Terrific for the citywide cultural and entertainment offering. And importantly, down at our with our Raby Bay, hardworking families, retirees down in Raby Bay, the ongoing capital works and maintenance work down there, some $3 million each year averaged out over the next 10. And that program should also progress more efficiently than ever with the great work that's been done with that community and the reference group that works with our council officers. I'd like to highlight the operational plan and the spending there. That's a pretty big 47.45% of our budget. And this is the maintenance programs needed to support the Redlands community. Further 30% of the budget goes to our staff who do the great work in supporting not just the operational plan, but every other aspect of council's work. The operational plan is in the budget documents today, and again, it's got some wonderful detail in it, and I'll just highlight a few of those elements because it shouldn't pass without some notice that the CapEx also gets. Within the operational plan, the planning on works to expand and enhance our park experiences go into that, so whether that be Redlands Track Park or across Bayview, there's a lot of planning work that goes into that, but also the operational works that are within those wonderful areas. The work that's going in to modernise our waste management strategies, maximise resource recovery and move towards our long-term goal of zero waste to landfill. A lot of spending that goes into that area, which we won't see until it's delivered, and with our regional partners on that. Expanding the active transport network of bikeways and footpaths and our council advocating for new ways of mass people movement to the state and federal governments. That work goes on behind the scenes. Progressing to the implementation stage of the Amity Point Shoreline Erosion Management Plan that this group of councillors and council just brought down a few weeks ago. That's going to be a very important part of looking after our shoreline and feed into works across the city, including down at Fordlands, with that expertise that we've gained. Other operational work, the oversight of our priority development areas, Wynnum Creek, Toondah Harbour, the work that's going on at Capalabar Town Centre. These are all significant projects, and the Hospital and Wellness Precinct may be our most significant area, that great work's going on within the operational part of council. Our work ongoing with Quandamooka Country, we should be justifiably proud of that work we do. It is nation-leading in some of its aspects, and we work together with our Quandamooka brothers and sisters towards the glad tomorrow that Uduru Noonuccal, our own Kath Walker, spoke about. It's an ongoing and enduring partnership, and I'm very proud to be a part of that. I mentioned our strategic centre improvement strategies, the Redlands Aquatic Centre, Toondah, Redlands Health and Wellness Precinct, Capalabar Master Plan, Wynnum Creek. I think personally, a glaring omission from that is our Cleveland CBD. Spoken about it for a few years. It remains absent from this long-term strategic list, and I'll talk more about that in a little while. So overall, I'm very pleased with our budget today. What I'm disappointed with is the chronic state and federal government's under-delivery to our community. That does impact the accumulated infrastructure deficit over, I believe, decades, does impact on our budget for this city and our ratepayers. Looking forward, I think we're getting better at that as a city, advocating and being the mouse that roared. We are a small council and we do need to punch above our weight in looking to get some of the funds that perhaps go towards Brisbane, Gold Coast, Ipswich. Looking forward, I think it'll take decades of consistent advocacy by successive councils and dogged community assistance to put our city back in the frame in William Street and in Canberra. So I call on the community and all our state and federal reps to get behind this council's hard work and get Redlands a longer term fair go with access to grants and other assistance. We're grateful for everything we get, but we don't want a banquet, but we do want more than the scraps from the table. Things like the transport infrastructure, spending in our hospital precinct and health spending to provide what we can to our community, support of North Shore of Ocala and its transition, and to all our Bay Islands, are some of the headlines that I think we need to advocate very strongly to those higher levels of government. Back to responsibilities of council. Some of the things I'm disappointed in this year is to highlight in my division. I'm disappointed that we haven't been able to progress the sewer connections at Point Lookout on Stradbroke Island. It remains a long-term commitment of this council. It will happen, but due to the challenging nature of the works and contractual obligations and difficulties, we're not progressing to any capital delivery this year. It will move forward, but I am disappointed that this isn't happening a little faster, and I'll be looking for multi-year funding of this project. I think it is a very significant project. If we do work together as a council, if we're all lucky to be here next time, on those multi-year funding commitments, that's certainly one that I think would fit the bill. Smaller items that would have loved to seen above the line, $128,000 for an RV dump point on Stradbroke Island, which would again support the tourism industry over there. $400,000 to $500,000 worth of gravel sealing for Amity Point and Point Lookout roads. Pretty basic for a mainland resident, but that's something that we're still trying to progress. It will happen, but just disappointed that those things can't come above the line sooner. One of my large commitments, and I'll come back to things I'm grateful for within the Cleveland CBD, I'm really grateful for the recent extensive roadworks on Middle Street, the pedestrian-friendly road treatments, some of the reclaiming of public space that's happened in that area, recent lighting repair along Middle Street that was just looking after our existing assets. Also acknowledge, moving forward in this budget, some ongoing commitments that all of our councils have made to continuing to make Cleveland a strong and connected community. The Visitor Information Centre down at Raby Bay, another wonderful thing that's been brought forward this year. So I'm really grateful for all that work that's happened. However, some specific examples of supportive budget items that did fall below the line this year amongst our CBD, $1.5 million for a Bloomfield Street lighting upgrade, and this is part of a much larger smart lighting and digital connectivity plan that has been in Council strategic planning for a few years, but we haven't been able to progress to that. And it's somewhat a $4 or $5 million project overall, I believe. $773,000 for bus shelter upgrades, and approximately a further $1 million for footpath and walkability upgrades around our city centre and our town centre here. That would have been lovely to have seen being brought forward, but that's my frustration that wasn't able to happen this year, given all the joint sacrifices that we make. So looking back across several councils, I do think our city centre of Cleveland remains a challenging space. It's a statement of fact that the Cleveland CBD and Master Plan is well over a decade old now. And there's been other studies around pedestrian and cycling connectivity that go back as long as 2003. So I firmly and respectfully highlight what I believe is perhaps a 12 to 15 year modest pass mark at delivering some of the vision of what Cleveland as the state's most livable centre has occurred. It's certainly a citywide strategic issue that requires a more focused and robust commitment to the implementation of a program of works that's firmly aligned with Council's existing long-term strategy documents. So it remains my intent to continue to work cooperatively with you all, but to urge all councillors and our executive leadership team to look for those partnerships and perhaps a more binding methodology to deliver on that CBD vision. So look forward to that. So in conclusion, today's budget and our past three budgets has shown that we can collectively manage tough strategic tasks. We've done really well. I'm confident this group can together rise to any emerging and existing challenges that still face us. So finally, bouquets to the council, to the ELT and the whole organisation for today's budget. I look forward to seeing the fruits of the hard work that we've done for many years to come. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Mayor. Probably won't be as complimentary. Look, I think it's okay sort of a budget. It's conservative. I think it's boring. It's all right. Look, there's no major projects in it. It's the lowest capital works program that I can remember in the last 7 years, certainly in the last 5 years. I know the argument is because we don't never deliver our full capital works program, but by decreasing it, I think we'll be sitting here in a year's time and saying, yeah, we weren't able to deliver it anyway. I think it's just lowering the benchmark there. There's no major projects going on, you know, and I think whoever the councillors are in the next term will probably be turning soil on a big sporting facility down at Hyman Road, aquatic centre at Cleveland, a little bit of luck, Toondah Harbour. They'll have some big, exciting projects to present. There's nothing major in this budget. I guess what it is, we've got a responsibility to manage residents' money, and it is a fairly conservative and safe budget. 2.6% rate increase on owner occupiers is fairly conservative. The spending is fairly responsible, but like I say, it's just a bit boring. I'd just like a little bit more excitement in my budget. From that, I think an important message this year has got to go out that it's not just state government charges that are contained within our rates. I've got my rates here for the next 12 months on my own property at Capalaba. They will be in total, and it's based on the same water usage of this year. In total, the rates will be $859, and of that, the state government will collect $222 of it. So, and that's 22% of the rates notice that I'll pay Redland City Council will go straight to the government, state government. We don't get that. So, 22%, that's a big charge. That's, where are they copping any flack on rates? They never do. But we have to collect that under legislation. We have to pass it through to them. I think that's really unfair, and that message, we've got to send that message out there. It's time they start collecting their own tax. That should be a big message of ours. But in total, for the year, $3,439 in rates, and the state government will collect $741 of that. Big message. I'd like to really see that driven home this year as we go out and sell our message. But look, it's all right. It's conservative. I don't know, can't say much more about it.
Just to remind you, Councillor, that you've got a very exciting project called the Capalaba Revitalisation, EOI, and about $1 million worth of park upgrades. But just a reminder, anyway. Yeah. It is happening. Thank you. Okay, thanks, Councillor Gleeson. I appreciate your support for the budget despite all of that. Councillor Golay, you're next.
Oh, boy. Thanks, Madam Chair. Look, just before I start, no one can predict the future, so this may be my last budget workshop. So I'd just like to thank the residents of Division 3 who put their faith and trust in me to stand in 2016 and to be sitting here today. The reason I raise that is because anything's possible. Anything can happen next year. So we've worked very collaboratively here, and there has been some major initiatives and projects that we've brought forward or are about to start. And we've managed that by working very closely together, not always agreeing, but working very firmly on the basis that we had to do the best for the community and the best for the organisation in the dual role that we have, which is one, a community representative and also a representative of the organisation. So to the officers, the CEO, the leadership team, all the officers in every department, thank you very much for being so patient with us, working with us, getting us to this point where, as a new council, we came in, there was an $11 million deficit. We now have a small surplus, and that has come from us working together despite our differences. Every family has their disjointed children, and never before have I seen such a disjointed family. But we still got there, and despite all the opinions out there in the residents and the community and who should be what and all the kingmakers trying to make us feel like we are, we have worked incredibly hard to deliver what I believe to be a very conservative budget. I know Division 3 has, in my opinion, come out on top. I know just before Christmas we negotiated together to bring an extra $600,000 to the Thornlands Area Park. And now in this budget we've got another $2 million set. That was brought about because we were able to come to the table in a mature fashion, negotiate the outcomes, make the sacrifices we needed to sacrifice, deliver a surplus, but still deliver to the community. Now the community's expectations are incredibly high, but to quote the CEO, if you're building your house, do you pay the power or build a swimming pool? And of course we've got to pay the power first. We've got to make sure that the basic services and business as usual services are met on a daily basis so that the community has running water and they flush their toilets and they've got sealed streets. Division 3's had various works underway to include pathways, parks, street art, street reseal, cycleways, dog off-lead parks, conservation land purchases, tree planting, sports facility upgrades. If we really look at Division 3 rocks, guys, I'm telling you, we've got it in the bag. But look, the cold hard reality is that we've worked very hard over the last 3 years to get to this point here. It is a conservative budget, but we do have to work within our limits. We do have to deliver what we can deliver that's reasonable and fair to all, but we also have the responsibility that it's public money, and we are not the Bank of Queensland here. It is Redland City Council. There's only so much money in the coffers. People don't like rate rises, and that's the primary income for any council. So we have to be responsible, and I think we've well and truly met that. So to all my colleagues, all the executives, all the staff, thank you very much, and most importantly, thank you to the community of Division 3 for placing your confidence in me for this term to deliver this budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Golay. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank the Mayor for her foresight and great compassion and empathy in trying to bring everyone together on a budget journey. It's never easy, and we're all individuals, definitely. And so, you know, it's a somewhat combative environment in here sometimes, and she does very well to balance and manage the classroom. I'd thank the officers who have also worked across the departments to gain savings, which are evident in the reports, and the department and group managers who have managed what I'm sure has been very stressful at some times and meeting the requirements of this group in such a calm and professional manner. They're very, very good. The budget is brought together over several months, as been mentioned, with lots of lengthy meetings and discussions needing to decide what's best for the overall best interests of the city. This includes policy decisions, revenue positions, down to simple decisions about, you know, spending on operational and maintenance matters. we have to be sure that we can be viable, and within those frameworks we can meet as much as is possible the expectations of our residents. In any budget there are areas of contention, as has been mentioned, and things that we do and don't support. I welcome continuing the pensioner rebate. I think that's very important. And there is a budget pressure when we have an ageing community, and that amount is continually going up with the growing number of ageing people across our community. But I believe that the community generally, our broader community, would support providing that support for our pensioners, and that's a very good thing. Council has in the past 3 years adopted a system of differential rating categories that applies a multiplier to a base level rate, which is designed to be consistent and transparent for residents to understand how rates are calculated. However, when one looks at the increased valuations applied by Treasury, and in some cases in my electorate of Division 6, these valuations have increased up to 60%, under methodologies which I personally don't agree with, it becomes really difficult to know what the individual impacts of rates will be. It's basically impossible for us to know that. I'm concerned particularly for some of my residents who have got acreage and farms in the area. Their valuations, which from what I understand from Treasury, were averaged over a much broader area, not just Redland, but averaged against similar sized properties in Logan and Gold Coast local government areas. Those residents are going to have an impact which I can't foresee. So I do hope that they have taken up the Treasury process.
Department of Natural Resources.
Of Natural Resources process, and challenge their valuations where appropriate. I do congratulate Council on trying to ensure the lowest possible increase generally, and this will be evidenced in the rate bills received by all those people whose property valuations have not increased or have not increased to a greater average across the city than others. It's very difficult for people to understand the implications of all the different factors that come into determining a rates notice. Within the budget documents, we can see new rating categories, for example, the canal estates, and that follows a significant communication and consultation process with residents across the whole city who were asked what's the fairest way to meet the requirements of maintenance on canal estates while acknowledging the public benefit of some of those areas. And this has been a robust process. I was impressed by it, and while it doesn't reflect everyone's personal views, I believe it was significant that councillors may have put aside their personal views and supported the feedback provided by the residents of the whole city, which was very supportive generally of their neighbours on the canal estates. There's a lot in the budget and I won't attempt to cover all of it. I think we've all heard most of it already. I would like to mention some aspects that you find in the budget document, for example, the environmental separate charge, which is laid out at item 5.5. I think sometimes in a dry accounting and policy position discussion that it's difficult for people to translate into their everyday lives how these kind of matters affect their life in Redlands Coast. And I think the environmental separate charge is a really direct way for people to see the benefit of those discussions and decisions, even though they might be a bit boring to listen to at every meeting. I know that in my electorate, the networks of tracks and trails, areas like Bayview Conservation Park and Wynnum Creek Parkland, and the ongoing development of the Eastern Escarpment are highly valued and used by our local residents. And the maintenance and planning of all of these areas is supported through the environmental separate charge. When we look at the budget documents at items 5.7 and 5.8, they cover the collection of monies for emergency services and support agencies, the SES, our Island Rural Fire Volunteers, and Council is doing more policy work in this area. So whilst I'm not particularly happy with that at the moment, we have been progressing it. We have had some really good reports and we will continue to progress that area. And I welcome that further development in our knowledge and understanding of the best way to prepare and protect our residents. And this council is always keen to support our volunteers in the Rural Fire Service and the SES. They do exemplary work and we get a big bang for our buck out of those wonderful volunteers. At 5.11, the budget papers address the operational plan for the coming year, and there are many things that are included as projects for the whole of city and for the south of the city that will address needs. But as is the case with all of our own household budgets, we would always wish that we could do more. Matters of note for me are the continuing work on roading improvements in the Collins Road area. This is one of several large projects that need to be addressed. But it's good that we have that significant budget to continue moving forward with that part of the road network. The budget is in place to continue plans for the development of the Eastern Escarpment Reserve, and I welcome continuing upgrades to our parks and recreation areas and equipment across the city. I believe the Council's decisions under the leadership of the Mayor to purchase key properties like that of the Commonwealth Birkdale land, land for sporting and environmental areas that we purchased in the last 2 years at Heinemann Road, as well as land at Alexandra Hills and the key parcel of land at Cleveland Point. I think all of these decisions made by this council in this term with the leadership of the Mayor will provide a legacy for future generation of Redlanders, and I think that history will look back kindly on us for achieving that legacy. So thank you, everyone. I sincerely hope that collaboratively during this year and any future budgets that we have the opportunity to participate in, we will find funding to continue the important work through the road sealing program for dirt roads that remain in our city. This is a key issue for me, and it's easy for people to assume that in 2019 that we would no longer have people living and driving on dirt roads this close to a major capital city. But we do have people having to cope with living on dirt roads, and this needs to be continued and to be addressed as a core activity of council, especially on Simbi. There are many areas of budget considerations, such as sewer and landfill remediation and everyday operational activities that replace broken playground parts, trim tree limbs, etc., that have significant cost and which, quite rightly, if done well, will never be noticed by the average resident. These are significant things that council does to ensure our health and the health of our community, but that happen almost invisibly, but if not done, would soon be noticed and become very evident. And this is the key and core activity of council. And oftentimes we have people say to us, well, what do I get for my rates notice? But the fact that they don't notice these things means that they're actually getting a lot. Once again, I congratulate the Mayor and her continued quality leadership and financial strategy and her attributions in finance that are reflected in the budget that she presents to us today. And I will be supporting her budget. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Tolte. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My first comment, I'd like to congratulate CEO Andrew Chesterman, the officers and every officer that works in this organisation for the effort they've put in to deliver this year. I don't think there's one officer in this organisation that doesn't try and deliver the best positive outcome for this city, and it's been a pleasure and an honour to work with them every year that I've been here. They do some amazing work, and they get as excited about a new project as we do. And often because councillors are the conduit to the community, they wear the brunt of some of that as well, which they really don't deserve to get hit with, but they do, and particularly our council support officers that do an amazing job. I think people don't realise, just last year, I'm talking operation, last year there were over 4,000 customer requests raised in my division alone, and that didn't include road complaints. So I don't think people realise the proliferation of social media and the digital media has put an impost on council to respond to nearly everything that people see, and it has a cost factor as well that bears down on this council, and it's enormous. Considering our staff numbers remain fairly static, the amount of work we are generating and responding is absolutely unbelievable, in my opinion. I've worked in private enterprise for 20 years, and I've never worked harder than I've worked in this job, or I've seen officers work that hard in this job. So if anyone says anything about public servants, then I'd be the first one to defend them, because it is not an easy job, and the impost on council with all these other issues that come forward every year are incredible. On top of that, we have six islands, seven if you want to make Parulpa a separate island. We have those. We have an enormous amount of infrastructure we've got to provide, which is costly. I've had millions of dollars spent at Victoria Point in the last few years on marine infrastructure, let alone parklands. I doubt there's a bad road in Victoria Point now, because Len Purdy and Nigel Carroll and the team have resurfaced them all. It's fantastic. And I looked at the capital expenditure budget and thought, well, this is a budget of austerity. But then I thought about it, it's really not. I just had a notification we're getting $2 million upgrade to the Moreton Bay cycleway through Victoria Point. We're getting that horrible dusty road down beside Link Road finally resurfaced after I've seen brides covered in dust for 25 years. So that's been, and I appreciate the officers' help with that because we had to get state approval to connect to Colburn Avenue. I've got park upgrades. So, yeah, on the surface, we all lost projects that we didn't want to lose. And I think there's a little bit of disappointment. When you look back retrospectively on what this council has delivered in the last 4 years, it's fairly fantastic. Like, it's amazing. Got the Thornlands Community Park coming in our local area soon, which everyone's looking forward to. $2 million investment by council. This money just doesn't. So every little bit imposed on rates operationally, and I think I congratulate the CEO and the rest of the staff for delivering this budget. I think it's a very good budget. And I think if we have a budget where we're not disappointed, then it's not a good budget anyway. So it's just that we've got to go and sell it to the community, and I'm sure the Mayor's media release will do that, so thank you for that. But, yeah, and on just to give the islands, Coochie Mudlow Island has received some significant funds this year, as had Simbi. I mean, they're beautiful island communities, and I've had land on Carragara when my wife was 16. I've got a house on Lamb Island now, and I'm just amazed at what Council does over there, and I'm truly appreciative of it. So well done. I'll be supporting this budget. Thank you.
Councillor Hewlett. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. And I, like my colleagues, have spent copious hours reviewing and just to get our budget speeches. And truly everything I've written here, the Mayor, the CEO and my fellow councillors have already said. And I feel like I shouldn't regurgitate the same points, but you know what, it's pretty jolly important, and so just bear with me a moment. I am going to stick to my speech, and I did start the same as Julie, Councillor Tolte. Thank you, Mayor. In this, my fourth budget speech, I would like to focus on the process that we as councillors have undertaken to deliver the budget, and has been previously highlighted by myself and my colleagues. It is a gruelling process, and it truly is a gruelling process. And we undertake this with the guidance and leadership of our CFO, Deborah Corbett-Hall. Thank you. With our strong leadership team, Mr. Oberhart, thank you. Mr. Best, thank you. And Ms. Razan, thank you. Our CEO, Mr. Chesterman, truly appreciated, and I have great respect for you all. It's important that I really wanted that on the record. The focus of the budget is always on the headline rate, and this year, no different to any other year, and our Capital Works program, a must read. But for many, and Councillor Mitchell said the same thing, for many, the most important part of the budget is the unsung operational works, our core business, and often referred to as business as usual, the BAU, for those that have heard that terminology many, many times. Without our BAU, our city would grind to a halt. So to all our 1,000 plus staff who every day carry out their contribution to BAU, I thank you. The same as Councillor Hewlett has just said, we do truly notice and appreciate our staff. And Mr. Chesterman, if you would kindly pass that back through the system, I would be greatly appreciative, as my colleagues. The process undertaken to secure the works programs in this year's budget has been generated from our business units, who were tasked with the role of scoping the projects and presenting them as shovel-ready packages to our portfolio management office. As Mr. Chesterman has already explained, the PMO has the microscopic scrutiny that they put this works packages through, the prioritisation principles of asset renewal, which we talk about often here in council, and our compliance-based activities, which is really important, our safety aspects and our legislation requirements that we need to meet with our projects requiring the strategic investment and the proposal and business cases that we put up. And that guidance has been tough. It's been really tough, as my colleagues have said, and Councillor Boglari led with that. The service impacts, the strategic driving and the governance, the affordability and deliverability, and your scrutiny is really appreciated, although sometimes we do get quite frustrated. With our tight budget constraints, the level of scrutiny has been, this year, it looked truly microscopic, is the word I've said, and it's a process that we have supported. I felt that it was really important that as the process was being worked through, that I had an opportunity to share what important projects needed highlighting in Division 8. But I was advised that this would not be appropriate, that the budget needed to be completed without political interference, and I reluctantly supported that premise. And I had asked early for meetings if I could have a chat, and I respected that. And so I was disappointed to note when the project was, the different projects were put before me, that Division 8 had missed out on a couple of capital works projects. And all of my colleagues have said the same thing. We've all missed out on projects that we really thought were vital and really important. And for me, it was pretty important that the Sturgeon Street Playground in Ormiston, we in the community were looking forward to replacing that existing old wooden play equipment that had suffered significant termite damage, and the fact that it did not make the cut and will probably not be delivered in the next 12 months is of deep concern to myself personally. I met with council staff and highlighted this playground and tried to swap it out in the budget for a toilet facility at Birkdale that has made the budget, but I was advised of different buckets of money. So again, it's really hard to explain that to the community when we're spending money here and we really want it there, but if it's a different bucket of money, as our CFO will attest, those monies are collected for specific things, and for that I'm pretty sorry that that playground has been put on the below budget line. I'm also disappointed that the planned and budgeted car park for upgrade in Judy Holt Reserve at Randall Road that hosts to the Muddy's Cricket, the Dog Obedience, the Darts, the Starfish Athletics and the Multi-Sports Club. There's approximately 500 people every week go through that area, and the car park was budgeted. The money's there in constrained funds, but it hasn't been brought forward, and I'm pretty disappointed about that. The impact to this car park upgrade not being put on hold will see some pretty regular unsavoury confrontations that we've consistently had over the last couple of years, so I really felt that that would be going forward, and disappointed that it's not. The good news for Judy Holt Reserve is that the council has recently installed the wheel stops and speed bumps, and also, like Councillor Mitchell, those things that have been happening in this year, and sitting in the back of the room, I note our Sherry Clark is sitting there and going out with Sherry. Thank you very much for your input to council, and the no more hooning, because I spoke about that in last year's budget, up there at Judy Holt will be just an enormous contribution. Now, the most important budget item that I've been tracking for the last 3 years is the desperate need for the lighting at St Anthony's Drive, Alexandra Hills. And when the Capital Works program was unveiled and the lighting was not included, I was immediately concerned and asked why it was not included. And the quick response being that the project was in the operational works. So I just breathed this enormous sigh of relief, thank goodness for that, because I was truly beside myself. And this lighting in St Anthony Drive for the community there, there's about 200 plus new residents, including special needs, in one of the complexes there, childcare, the St Anthony's Primary School, the church, the hall and the office buildings. St Anthony Drive, if you're looking on the map in our city, St Anthony Drive is a very small little street. However, with the amount of infill that's gone in there, the impact now is enormous. My relief was short-lived, as a couple of days later, when councillors were advised of the new operational works request, the lighting for St Anthony's Drive was not listed. I just couldn't believe it. And it's not been allocated funding in this year's budget. Yet with the funding allocated in last year's budget, up until today, tomorrow, we've scoped the work. Its detailed design has been done. This is a project that's shovel ready. It's sitting in a large file, and I can show you in this building where it is. It's on a bookcase. It's in this file. It's got four lights with the that'll go down the street beside the new units in St Anthony Drive. The cost is $100,000. these lights were not originally installed as the units were developed due to an error, an internal error within council. The lighting was not conditioned to these developments. Noting that once the assets are installed, they will be handed over to Energex on completion for their ongoing maintenance, which is a normal procedure. So there will be no additional cost to council. So $100,000, it was so close. I really felt that it was here. Understanding the safety amenity and something as simple as having a visitor at night for my residents, it has just had an extremely high impact. This is over 200 people. When one of my very unwell residents was waiting for an ambulance, the ambulance got to the street and it did get confused. If you go down St Anthony Drive at night, there's units upon units upon units upon units. There is no lighting there. The ambulance got confused. The concern to the family of the gentleman that was very unwell and to the neighbours, I mean, I was met with a posse, I can tell you. This is really unacceptable and I'm embarrassed and I'm shocked that council will not be installing these lights. I just feel it's really terrible. I understand the budget process. I understand the constraints that we've got and I support the system that we've used, but it's been really hard to see this. So I go back to my initial query at the start of my budget speech. As a councillor, I had no opportunity to share with our officers my divisional hotspots, my urgent needs, safety issues, nothing. I understand that the budget process should not become a divisional or political discussion, and I respect that. I truly do. But I also understand that as a councillor, I have an enormous responsibility to represent my residents and their needs. And on this occasion, my heart is sad for my St Anthony residents and their wider community, literally the hundreds of folk that will continue without basic streetlights. Mayor, I will support the budget and I am delighted that we continue to offer our residents such a diverse mix of services from our new library bus to our foreshores. Just across the city, so many different things. But I'm pleading that the installation of the lights at St Anthony Drive be highlighted our earliest budget review or opportunity, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Edwards.
Well, the good news is we're nearly at an end. And with Councillor Elliott not feeling well, I don't think he'll be talking for too long. And I don't want to risk people snoring behind me. Thanks to the CEO for his speech because it saved me a considerable amount of reading, which I'll just skip through. And you said it better than I could anyway, so that was great. I'm going to take the opportunity to have a whinge about a particular issue that's important to me, but I want you to just understand that by me not going through all the things that all of you said, I think this is a good budget. And I'm going to support it, don't seek any changes to it, but I'm going to take and read as fast as I can to get through to this issue just to reinforce how important it is to me. So bear with me, and I'm sure we'll have Councillor Elliott in here shortly. The capital works budget draws most of the attention from councillors and community alike, and it's the area of budget where things that we want are against, weighed against the things that we need and all confined to the dollar amount that we can afford, and we all know that. And it's within this setting that sometimes tensions are raised between us and what is important to each of us and why they are important to our community. Our role is to ensure that the capital expenditure is allocated on need, wherever that need is within the city, and that's where tensions can become heightened. And we know there are areas within Redlands where need is higher than other areas, and I believe our island sits at the apex of that need. It can be frustrating for many of you. Each year, more financial demands are placed on council to serve the islands and build the infrastructure that's needed. You have made some tough decisions over the years, and you should actually be commended for keeping to the task at hand and delivering what you have. I understand when people get frustrated when the things we would like to have be included in the Capital Works program are diminished due to things that we must provide first. But we make hard decisions because it's what we have to do. Several years ago, Council introduced a green seal program to the islands, which provided a lower cost narrow bitumen seal over the gravel roads. There's no curb and channel on these roads, and in many instances they're just wide enough just for one
vehicle to travel. This is an extremely successful program that has delivered sealed roads to the islands at a faster rate and a lower cost, and that's been embraced by most of the community. Council has delivered many kilometres of roads, and those residents who have benefited are very appreciative of Council. Yet there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who still live on a road that remains dusty, rutted and potholed, but they await patiently for their turn for their road to be sealed. Some of these residents have breathing difficulties, and their quality of life would be better if they lived somewhere else. But the reality is that moving is not a financial option for many. They await with trust in council. This year, during our capital works, I was extremely disappointed that there was no budget allocation this year for a green seal program. But I was thankful because I believe there was support for any council savings made during the coming year to be allocated to keep the green seal program operating. And I actually express thanks to all councillors an email I sent the following that workshop. But it appears now that I was mistaken. And as a result, there is $1.5 million in our capital works program that remains unallocated. I want to return to the operational expenditure of the council. The maintenance of gravel roads falls into that category. Gravel roads on the islands break down quickly from traffic flows, rain, wind and then drying out. This means that council has a heavy cost in grading and reshaping island gravel roads at regular intervals. When this work is carried out, it's done to a standard that an additional extra expense to place a bitumen coating on top would protect the road from quickly breaking down and needed to be graded and reshaped again. We have been told by our road engineers that green sealing these roads would provide a $50 million savings in the operational budget over time. To continue the green seal on island roads not only makes good community sense, but it also makes long-term financial sense. We currently have an offer from the federal government for $500,000 towards this green sealing. Whilst this is in the process of being signed off, federal and state government grants usually require council co-contribution, and this budget doesn't provide for that. Last week, I attended the Local Government Association conference in Canberra, and I was aware that this important green seal program was at risk. So I wrote a letter to the Prime Minister begging for $5 million in federal assistance for our roads, and then I went and delivered it to Parliament House. The Deputy Prime Minister, Michael McCormack, addressed the conference and spoke about helping councils fund shovel-ready projects. So, I sent the Deputy Prime Minister a similar begging letter. On the last day of the conference, the Minister for Local Government, Mark Colton, addressed the Assembly, and he spoke of his time in local government and how he wants to get out there and show how he's going to help council. So, you're right, he got another begging letter from me as well. And I know these might not go anywhere, but it's important that we try every avenue we can to show that we have issues on those islands that are of a financial amount. It's very difficult for a council of our size to service that need. So, councillors, today I seek your support, and I don't have a begging letter for each of you, for the continuation of the Green Seal program, not through changing the budget, but through savings made during the financial year, for part of the unallocated capital works funds to help support those grant funds that we do get offered, and to continue the green seal programs. As I said, I'm not seeking any amendments to this budget, and I'm not asking for unlimited funding. I just seek that your support to the executive to continue the green seal program from any savings we might achieve, and that all of you have input into what gets done at our quarterly budget reviews. Please don't stop the Green Seal program as an important and valued program that delivers in all areas. Now finally, I'd like to thank my colleagues for the extension of the footpath on Centre Road, Russell Island. As you know, this is a recommendation from the coroner's report following the tragic death of a young pedestrian who was hit by a vehicle. There have also been other pedestrian fatalities on the islands due to the absence of footpaths. Footpaths provide safer passage for pedestrians anywhere in the city, and I support more footpaths in all of our divisions. So, thanks for the opportunity to talk to the budget. It is a really good budget. I think it delivers across the board, but I'm going to wear my heart on my sleeve and say, please continue the Green Seal program.
Councillor Elliott, we know you're not feeling well. Appreciate you being here. Did you want to speak to the budget at all?
I'll just say a couple of words. I'd just like to thank Mr. Chesterman. Since he's arrived on the doorstep, this has been a very... he had a big job ahead of him himself, and we've wound in many, many millions of dollars. We see a lot of things there now in capital works programs and operating programs that are in the true lines they should be. And I congratulate him and the team on that. Thank you.
Okay, councillors, if there are no further... I think everyone's had their natter. I'll now ask for a motion to resume standing orders and meeting proceedings. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. All right, so councillors, the item is 5.1, a statement of estimated financial position. Could I have a mover and seconder for that? Thanks, councillors. No, we're not. No, we're not moving. We're one at a time, councillors. That's what. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? The motion's carried unanimously. Item 5.2, national competition policy requirements. Mover and seconder. Move Councillor Hewlett, seconded Councillor Elliott. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Our debt policy 5.3. Mover and seconder. Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Oh, question, sorry, Councillor Boglari.
If I may, Madam Mayor, I gave Deb the heads up yesterday. I was going to ask her this question because I've been looking at it, and I think the policy is great, and it's very clear how much thought goes into any debt we take. That's very clear for anyone who wants to read it, how we align it with specific projects for accountability and everything. I'm just concerned because when you look at the forecast, we blow out to $114 million worth of debt, yet none of that is actually planned or drawn down or anything. But if someone just has a look at that, they could be mischievous with those figures. And I'd just like Deb to actually explain why they're there, please.
So, CFO, if you don't mind just talking to that question.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you, Chair. Thank you, Councillor, for the opportunity. The debt schedule is a legal requirement, so we can't adopt a debt policy without a 10-year schedule within it. The numbers come out of our 10-year model, which picks up the 10-year capital works. They're also the assumptions that we look at in our financial strategy that you see tabled before you at item 5.12. So the debt policy is also required by legislation to be reviewed every year. What we have in front of us as part of this debt policy for 1920 is based on today's information with the current estimates and assumptions and parameters that are in our 10-year financial strategy, a roadmap or placeholder for possible borrowings down the track. So Council may recall in recent years we've had amounts in a debt policy that if the works haven't progressed, haven't continued, or council has removed those works, the debt certainly doesn't get drawn down. So the amounts are currently sustainable because you can see that through the 10 years of the key performance indicators that are contained not only in the budget at this in item 5.9 but also in 5.12 with the financial strategy. So if the question is it financially responsible and sustainable, with the current information and assumptions today, Councillor, yes, they are. We certainly can't lock anything in, and the debt policy will be reviewed every year. I'm not a betting person, but I'm sure the amounts will change before each year when Council decides what it may draw down as new borrowings.
I just appreciate that clarification, because when I initially first saw that, I was concerned myself. So the CFO has always reassured me, and I just wanted to reassure the public. Thank you.
So we have a mover and seconder. If I can put the motion, those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 5.4, mover and seconder for categorisation of land differential rating. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Golay. Question, Councillor Bishop.
Yes, Madam Mayor, if I may, again, through you to CFO, just in relation to that proposed charge, I know that you've sent some information through, and pending the discussion that's going to need to happen with Aquatic Paradise, just some clarity for those who are in the room today, just about that charge, if I can ask for that, please.
And you might want to refer to the broader consultation across the three Canal Lake regions and how that principle has been carried across.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Not sure I need to say any further than that, but through you as Chair, councillors may recall there was comprehensive community consultation and for the Canal and Lakes area. So last year, off the back of the community consultation, when council was deliberating its 2018-19 budget, it may recall there was a programme of works for revetment wall for the Rabie Bay geographical area. So council made the decision, based on recommendations in the community consultation, to create 7 new rating categories for Rabie Bay. So that was last year by way of background. In terms of this current annual budget development process, councillors will recall that a programme of works for revetment walls at the Aquatic Paradise geographical area was put to it, and council supported that proposed programme of works, and council directed officers to be consistent from a principle-based perspective to create 7 new rating categories in a very similar principle-based approach to the Rabie Bay geographical areas. So 7 new categories have come into the 1920 budget, bringing up to 28 rating categories, with the intent of the revenue being raised through the differential general rate to fund the revetment wall work. So if anyone were to be inclined to have a read of the detail in this agenda item or indeed in the revenue statement, you can see that the rating categories, the wording is very similar, but the geographical area is different. When you turn to the revenue statement, you'll see that the rate in the dollar is different because it's purely based on the programme of works at that time for that particular financial year.
One further question, if I may. And that just in relation to previous matters, the frozen reserve, if I can just ask for a clarification as to where that sits, just, if that's okay.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you as Chair, not directly linked to this year's budget or within the current budget papers, but in terms of the constrained cash reserves, Council reports on those every month. With respect to the ones that are there for the Canal and Lake previous special charges, you're using the right terminology, Council, so they are frozen. Council chose to freeze the reserves in terms of not withdrawing any more funds on the 31st of March 2017. Interest is still attributed to those reserves, and you'll see those amounts will change on a monthly basis. Council is not providing any direction currently to change those reserves, move those reserves. So currently they're on hold. They've been on hold since the close of the refund project that happened now towards the end of 2017, early 2018. And of course, there's other matters at hand that really preclude financial services and myself making any recommendations about those reserves. So at the moment, we report on them every month. We still attribute interest to them, and they're there for anyone to ask me about at any time.
Thank you. And just as feedback, I understand Council's view, and I need to go with the majority view on this. As far as I'm concerned, as a representative for Aquatic Paradise Residents Association, I think there's incredible wealth of knowledge that they can bring to the table. I think together that is a discussion that needs to be had with them rather than Council making this decision and leaving them with this responsibility. I'm looking forward to having that conversation and working with them in order to make that clear and so that everyone has certainty going forward. But for that reason, at this point, because I'm not able to speak with the residents about that and inform us as a body about how we can make this most effective and efficient, I'm not going to support this particular vote, but that's my reasons, and I'll be standing side by side with residents and council officers to make sure that we can get back on the program, we can look toward the future and plan this critical infrastructure that everyone relies upon in that area in a way that's going to be in the best interests and that makes common sense. Thank you.
If I could just add a couple of points there as well. Firstly, when we're going through a budget process, we're legislatively required to do it in confidence, so that's what's happened. The technical working groups with the canals continue to have those discussions, so there's no should be no major surprises about the amounts. Refer back to the principle on those three geographical areas in regards to the citizens' jury that we put together. The principle would be that we absorb the majority of the maintenance, if I recall correctly, but we would collect funds on behalf of the Canal and Lake communities as an insurance policy for their revetment walls and for any repairs that might be necessary, so that we didn't have the domino effect of one engineering failure due to a landowner not doing the right thing impacting on others. So that was the outcome of the discussion with the broader community as to how we best manage that into the future. I think it's fair to say that the costs for Aquatic Paradise as opposed to Raby Bay are substantially different because those issues aren't quite... You know, it's a very small amount comparatively, but we're applying that principle to be fair not only to the Aquatic Paradise residents, but also to the principles, the principle-based approach that has been passed on to Raby Bay. So I appreciate that. That's you want to not support that? That's fine, councillor. I think we'll move on if that's right.
Just in relation to the technical working group, which was to do with the dredge, now that that's ceased. My hope is that we will have
absolutely
an equivalent.
Yeah, we can keep talking as we do with the others. Councillor Boglari.
No, both of us mentioned in our speeches how we did mitigation, and I think on page 25 it's a good example of how that happened in our rating category. So 1A is basically our residential properties. So this year in point two, it has a value less than or equal to $385,000, and last year that was $350,000. So we actually increased that because the valuations had raised the value of the properties. We increased that amount so more properties were actually captured under 1A to help mitigate the rate increase. And I just think it's good to explain it to residents because we were talking about what we did to mitigate, but I don't know whether I made that clear. But I think it's good for residents to know what each bit understand it.
Thank you, Councillor Boglari. If there's no further questions about that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in against, Councillor? Yeah. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Bishop. Thank you. Item 5.5, mover and seconder for that, if I may. Move Councillor Hewlett, seconded Councillor Hughes. Any discussion there required? Put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 5.6, mover and seconder. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Hewlett. Any discussion? There being none, put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 5.7, our SES administration charge. Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Edwards. Any discussion? Those in favour? Thank you. Those against? That's carried unanimously. Item 5.8, our Rural Fire Brigade special charge. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Golay. Any discussion? There being none, put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Motion's carried unanimously. Option 5.9, mover and seconder for the budget estimates. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconder Councillor Elliott. Any discussion? Is there a discussion, Councillor? Yeah. Oh, that's why we give you that 10 minutes each. Let's note that it's a great document. Yeah. Great. Any further discussion? Thank you, Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 5.10, adoption of the 2019-2020 rates notice. Moved by Councillor Elliott, seconded by Councillor Hughes. Any discussion? Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 5.11, mover, move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Gleeson. Item 5.12, financial strategy. Moved Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Oh, any discussion? Those in favour? Councillor Boglari.
Again, I don't understand. Every single agenda item here is our financial sustainability going forward. And I think every, even though we've all said our little piece, I think every agenda item should have had some discussion, because we bring our community on board with us. They understand it a lot better, and we don't get slapped around the head, as Councillor Bishop said previously. My concern, I've got a couple in here, but I am going to support it, but the Redlands Investment Corporation is showing no forecast, is forecasted no financial returns to council for 10 years. And we set up RIC to actually give back some dividends to take pressure off our rates, and that isn't happening. And I think going forward, I know we haven't got their budgeted figures for this year yet. I believe we're going to get them next year. But you can see in the tables that at the moment there's nothing forecast, and I think going forward we need to, it hasn't been as successful in that field, we need to have a discussion about that.
I'd just like to comment that we also decided that it wouldn't just be about financial return, but it would be community return. So albeit there might not be a financial impact, they are actually delivering projects that are much less a cost to the community. So there is ultimately savings that you might not see as a dividend, but you are seeing on the bottom line. Councillor Bishop.
Just with regards to that, I think having a vehicle like Redlands Investment Corporation has great opportunities and potential. One of the things, again, going back to what I was suggesting before, is feedback from the community about how it can be useful, where it can be useful, where we should allow it to go, needs to be guided not only by adherence to the best processes and principles and practices, but also needs to be guided by the expectations of the community. I really look forward to that conversation going forward. And making sure that we do ground truth that, because I think we want to make sure that that's a with story. If it's about legacy building, management of the entire asset, and looking at revenue streams that will balance the budget, we need to have that robust conversation with the community. I look forward to that. In relation to this particular document, in relation to asset management, the work being done by officers in order to ensure that we have a robust understanding through the asset mapping program, through the portfolio management office, and this goes into the sequencing of that rolling year-on-year fund. I think that's critically important. I want to again thank very much the CEO and the work through ELT and SLT for designing those rolling programs of works. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Any other discussion? Put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. And I close the meeting. Once again, if I could, before I do that, just thank the officers for the great work, Deb and team, ELT, SLT, and we look forward to delivering on the document in front of us, and I close the meeting at 3 p.m. Thank you.